Welcome to the Open Adoption Project. This is episode 106. We're the Nelsons. I'm Lynette.
And I'm Sean. In today's episode, I share an interview that I conducted with Caden Riley. Caden's great. Lynette and I met him in person back in April when we led a panel discussion at the Utah Foster Care Annual Symposium. And he was one of four adult adoptees, or those who had been in foster care, that shared their experience, particularly with openness during that conversation. But we loved connecting with him. Such a great guy, and we feel like his story is going to be impactful to you.
Yeah, we're really grateful for his willingness to share and teach us today. He is really a wonderful person, has a great light to him, and we're really, really so thankful that we had the opportunity to connect with him, and now that we can share his experience with you guys.
So, as an adult adoptee who was placed into foster care as an infant, we hope that this episode teaches you and helps you learn. All right, well, we are now on the podcast with Caden Riley. Caden, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. To our audience that's listening, we met Caden just over a month ago, actually, when we presented at the Utah Foster Care Symposium, the annual symposium that they do. Lynette and I were asked to facilitate or lead a panel discussion of adult adoptees or those who had been in foster care. And Caden was one of the four people that we interviewed, and we were so impressed by him. So we wanted to bring him onto the podcast to share his experience and story. I think there's a lot we can learn. So thank you again for being with us, Caden. We're going to turn the time to you just to share your experience and your story. And there's a lot to it. So please just help us understand what your lived experience has been.
Yeah, of course. Well, thanks again for having me. And I think it's going to be exciting to talk about all of this and kind of my story. But yeah, I would say my story is pretty unique. I think from the very beginning, there's a lot of different caveats to it. And so it really all just starts at birth. And so I was placed for adoption immediately at birth. And so my biological mother had me, and I was born with addicted to meth, marijuana, heroin, and cocaine. And then I spent the next 10 days in the NICU in Salt Lake City. And about the second day, the hospital called DCFS, and DCFS contacted some foster parents. And then about the second day, these foster parents came, and they really came to the hospital and got to know me and hold me and carry me. And then about 10 days later, I was officially able to go home with them. So that's kind of really where my story began. My mom was about 21 when I was born, and then my dad was actually 65 when I was born. So that was a huge, complete age gap. And so, unfortunately, my dad wasn't really able to step into the picture at the time. But I do remember, well, I don't remember, but people telling me that I had some visits with him, and that went really great. But yeah, and so I was placed with these foster parents, and this family was amazing. I was actually the youngest of seven siblings. Five of us were adopted. The two oldest were not adopted. And so already, you know, these foster parents were familiar with the foster care process. And so I think it took about 7 months to a year, and then I was officially adopted by them. So yeah, I was raised in Ogden, Utah up until about 5 years old. And then after five, I moved down to St. George, and then that's where I was raised. But yeah, like I said, so being the youngest of seven siblings, it was really unique. There is a huge age gap with that as well. And so my oldest sibling is 20 years older than me. And so it was kind of funny because he came home from his LDS mission and he had a new brother. And so it was kind of just a weird dynamic there from the start. But, you know, things turned out to really work well. But yeah, like I said, there's five of us that were adopted, and I was really close to my two sisters just above age in me. And so they are half siblings, and they're also transracial adoptees. And so my dad's African-American, and then my mom's Hispanic. And then my two sisters, their mom's Black, and then their dad's Hispanic. And so that was also kind of another part of my adoption story that I really connected with. And so being able to connect with those siblings, I think, was a really detrimental part of my experience that you'll hear later on. Anyways, but growing up in St. George, it was honestly, it was great. You know, my dad traveled for work and I was able to really go to different states and, you know, have all these other experiences that I think at a young age really shaped my growth in a lot of ways, you know, being able to be placed outside of, you know, the small community of Southern Utah, I think was really amazing. A little couple of stories when it came to traveling, right? So I said, I was a part of the transracial family. So I think one of the states we went to was like Missouri, Tennessee, so like the South, right? And I remember my family getting a bunch of stares because they're like, oh, what are these, you know, parents doing with these brown children? And it was just a weird dynamic there, but it turned out to work. But yeah, so growing up in St. George was really, really great and everything. But I think around the age of 8, I really started to kind of struggle a little bit with my identity. You know, I think that's the age that you realize you start, like, start realizing that you look a little different than other people. So I think that's when I was really able to come into my identity and see that, like, you know, I don't look like my parents. I don't look like most of my other family members. Like, what is this, right? You know, because I always knew that I was adopted. My parents never kept that a secret, not that they really could, but
hard to keep that secret.
Exactly. Pretty hard to keep it a secret. But yeah. And so, yeah, so I was really kind of struggling with that. And so I kind of pushed that off to the side and I was like, you know what, I don't really want to explore that at the time. And then around the age of like 11, 12 is when it really started to hit me. And let me back up a little bit, actually.
No, you're
so
good.
Before it started to really hit me really bad, like I said, things were going pretty good. And so my parents, you know, had me playing football. They had me playing soccer. And then they actually had me attend this charter school, which was a performing arts school out in Ivins. And I was really able to thrive there, you know, because I had a passion for singing and music. And this school was really helping me to kind of explore those ideas and passions in my life. I would say, like, I was pretty popular. You know, I was very outgoing. I was very much, like, doing all these things that really, that I was passionate about, right?
Yeah.
And so now going back to when I started to struggle. And so started struggling around the age of 12 and, you know, kind of fell into like a deep depression, struggled with my identity and skipping school. And so my parents felt like they had no other option than to, like, you know, put me on medication and have me go see a therapist. And so for the first time I was able to, you know, go to therapy and, you know, get on medication. Hopefully that would help, right? You'd think that all of these things would help me adjust to kind of like dealing with, you know, being adopted and all those things. But come to find out, unfortunately, things got worse and worse and worse. So yeah, around that age, my parents just felt like they had no other option, fortunately. And then I was placed into like a mental health facility. And this facility was really unique just because it was a pretty restrictive institution that really was locked down and really not a great environment for me, unfortunately. And then I spent the next 7 months in that program. And then I came home from that program, obviously living on a high, right? I think when you're in such an intensive facility, therapy, group therapy, highly medicated, you know, you're obviously going to thrive. And so for the next couple of months, you know, I was placed back into that performing arts school, back into football and all of that stuff. But then once again, a couple months later, I was hit with another set of depression and anxiety. But this time it came with like more complex trauma because I didn't really address some of the things that went down in this program. And so I was placed into another program for another 7 months. And then at the end of that program, I reached out via Facebook, like on a home visit, I think, and messaged one of my biological sisters on my mom's or my dad's side. And I haven't met them before because my adoption was closed. And so I've seen pictures of my biological father and family members, but I had never actually like met them. And so I reached out to her and I sent a picture of myself kind of awkward. And I was like, I think I'm your brother. This is Caden. This is your brother, whatever. I'd love to meet you. And then I was put back into this program. And then at the tail end of this program, I was in a therapy session with my parents and everybody. And they're like, Caden, we want to inform you about something. And I was thinking like, oh no, like they found something that I was doing that like wasn't appropriate or something. But I was shocked to find out that my sister did reach back out to my parents, and they said that my biological father was, on his deathbed, and if they could find it in their hearts to let me see him before he passed away. And I immediately began bawling, crying, because that was honestly the last thing that I could have expected them to say. And, all of those emotions of, growing up as like a young, African American male, in Southern Utah, and really yearning for that relationship with my father that I thought maybe one day, once I turn 18, I could have. And so hearing the fact that he was on his deathbed was really hard for me.
How old were you at the
And
time?
so, yeah, I was about 15 years
Okay.
old. Yeah, so I was 15 at the time. Yeah. And so, yeah, moving forward, my parents did find it in their hearts to allow me to see him. And so in 2017, at the age of 15, I went with my parents and one of my adoptive sisters, and we went and saw him at a resting home in Ogden, Utah. And, to my surprise, there was a bunch of other family members, cousins, aunts, uncles there as well. And I think that moment hit me that I knew that this might not, I might not get that like happy ending of being able to gain this huge relationship with him. And so, I spent the next hours with him at this facility, getting to know him, talking to him. And it was just a really great experience because, for several reasons, obviously, but I think as cliche as it sounds, just like looking at him, and looking at our faces and seeing the similarities and what we look like and our mannerisms and asking stupid questions like, oh, where are you from? Or like, what's your favorite color? Which I think are all things that might come so easy to like the general population. But I think to people that experience foster care or being adopted, those are all questions that we would love to have. And so I think being able to connect that way was really eye-opening. And then getting to learn that a lot of my family on that side also were musicians and singers and, athletes, I think was also just a reinstatement to me that, you know what, I am like part of them, and I do have that literally running through my blood, I think was really, really cool. And so yeah, at the end of this program, so still in this residential program, I got a phone call from this guy. Well, actually not a phone call. He actually came in person and introduced himself to me. And he introduced himself to me as my DCFS caseworker. And at the time, I didn't really know what that meant. But at the age of 15, I found out that I was placed back into the foster care system. And really, honestly, I didn't know what that meant in a lot of ways. I was like, okay, so like, what does this mean? Like, I was shocked because, like, of course, I was adopted, but I think adoption and foster care, as we all know, is two complete different things. And so I really didn't know what foster care was. And so I was like scared, obviously, but luckily my adoptive family was still heavily a part of my life. So luckily, like, they didn't just give up on me in that sense. And so it was really just the involvement of the state and having a caseworker, guardian ad litem, all of those people that really made it difficult for me. And so, yeah, that happened in 2017. And then I was placed back into another facility after that, where I would spend the next like 4 years, unfortunately. In the foster care system. And throughout those 4 years, it was really hard because this program was pretty restrictive, and it really forced me to conform to kind of like what they wanted me to be. And so, I was highly medicated, couldn't have access to the internet, really couldn't go on a walk by myself without a staff, couldn't ex go to a normal school, had to do packet work and all of these things. And so, as you can see, quite literally a contradiction to where I was a couple years ago of highly involved, being super popular at school, being involved in all these extracurricular activities, to literally quite the opposite of that. And so it was a complete, 360, and it was just really, really hard on me. And throughout that time, I was able to, connect with my adoptive family still, obviously, and talk to them and had home visits periodically, but was really detrimental on my relationship with them. And then a couple months after my initial admission, I guess, to this facility, I received a phone call shortly, like a week before my birthday, actually, that my biological father had passed away. And that moment, I will never forget. because my family was actually like on a vacation in Park City, like we do every year. And you know, I knew his health was bad and all of those things. And I didn't have a phone at the time, but my mom did. And so I remember I was sitting on the couch in like our room, and I saw that she was getting a phone call from my biological sister. And the second I saw the phone ring, saw her name on it, I started bawling, and I felt it in my heart that he had passed away. And so I'm never going to forget that moment, just because it's like, I do think that he was like speaking to me in a sense, you know, of like, this is his time. And so, not trying to get emotional, but yeah, so he passed away a couple of days before my birthday, and that was really, really hard on me. You know, like I said, I really wanted to gain that relationship with him. And, you know, I wanted that ever since I was little, ever since I could remember. I think that was such a huge part of my identity that I think I missed out on. And so, yeah, moving forward, I spent, you know, 4 years like in this program. And it was just a complete waste of time. That's just how I'm going to put it. Like I said, I wasn't really able to just like be myself, and it was really hard in a lot of ways. Let's see, what was it? I think come like 2020, I was about like at the age of like 18, getting ready to graduate high school. And because of this program, I wasn't able to really be in mainstream school. And so, full transparency, I had like 9 completed credits. And so the reality of graduating high school is like absolutely not impossible. And so I ended up just getting my GED, graduated my GED right on time with my actually graduating class of 2020, ironically enough. And one of the parts of graduating for me was being able to walk with my class. But if you remember, you know, COVID-19 also ruined the walking graduation for all of 2020
sure
graduates.
Did.
So, yeah. And so I didn't even walk anyway. So that was kind of a blessing in disguise of like, you know what, it all works out the end, and I accomplished it and with everybody else. And so that was really great. And because of all of that, just going through all those things, I also age out of foster care at 18. And so spent the next 2 years really trying to figure things out, you know, working, you know, finding different like friends and supports. And then in 2022 is when I first started to attend Utah Tech University in St. George. And I was studying psychology. Well, I still am, but I studied psychology there, and it was a really great experience. I think going from where I was at to now knowing that I can be in college and that I can like achieve these things that other people in my life thought I could never do, I think was really, just really like inspiring to me.
Yeah.
And so I basically finished my associates there. And then I just recently actually got admitted to the University of Utah. And so I'll be transferring up there for fall of 2024.
Congrats.
And thank you. And I'll be finishing up my bachelor's degree in psychology there. And then hopefully my goal is to kind of get my PhD in clinical psychology, either from the U or another institution. But yeah, that's a little bit about my foster care experience. And obviously you'll hear more about kind of what I'm doing when it comes to like giving back to that community and, you know, advocating for change. But yeah.
Great. Well, I have a couple questions just kind of as follow-up, just for clarification for our listeners. So at 15, you were put into basically the state's custody when you say you were put back into care, to care. But at any point, were you ever put with like foster parents, or was it just state care?
Yeah, so it was actually just state care.
Okay.
I was never placed with foster parents. I think if people are familiar a little bit with different placements and DCFS and stuff, like I was too, my level was too high. So my behaviors were just too bad, I guess, to be able to be placed with just a regular foster family. And so it was just more of these residential programs.
Okay.
Institutions. Yeah.
Wow. So challenging. I cannot even imagine. And so complex, but we'll try to, we're going to try to learn from your experience. We're going to unpack quite a bit of that. And like you said, we'd love to hear about what you're doing right now to help the community. So first off, this is a very loaded and big question, but how do you feel like all of these experiences, both being an adoptee and your time in care, have shaped you to who you are today?
Yeah, all it might come as a surprise, but I'll say it time and time again. Honestly, I wouldn't change it for anything. You know, I think these experiences really allowed me to see the system and myself and different parts of just the world in general, actually, and different experiences from just a different light, a different lens. And so I honestly want to change it. I would probably go through it time and time again, actually, if I knew that because of those experiences that I'd be in the place that I am currently. And so, yeah, I think those experiences really shaped me into the person I am today. And I think I want to change that.
Awesome. I think that's a really mature answer. Obviously, there's probably little aspect for every one of us that we would want to change, but that holistically that you're seeing how your experiences have helped you become who you are today, and you don't want to change that. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. If there was one thing that you would like others to know or understand about the adoptee experience, what would you want them to know?
That's a good one. I could have several answers for that, obviously, but I think the main one for me would be, you know, just the fact that we're just like everybody else. You know, I think, unfortunately, I think we're getting better at it, but I think there's some stigma surrounding like adoption, and especially like adopting like a teen or something like that. And so I think what I would tell to people looking into, you know, fostering or adopting people is just the fact that like, we're just like everybody else who, you know, wants a home, who needs that stability, who needs a caring adult individual in their life to support them and help them get to where they want to be. And so, yeah, I think we're just like everybody else. And I think the more we like just normalize that, like families look so different for everyone, regardless of like adoption or foster care, like just in general, there's so many different dynamics to families. Like, why is it so different adding this adoption part to it, you know? And so I think just normalizing overall and just realizing that like, these are just kids or youth or teenagers that, you know, just want to be loved. So,
yeah. So obviously you were adopted, you know, 20 plus years ago. Thinking like retrospectively, what do you wish your family or the adoption community would have known or could have done? Kind of in retrospect, knowing what we know today, what do you wish they could have known or done then?
I would say, I think just the fact that, you know, I was kind of like in that transracial family, there's a few different perspectives I felt like could have been a little different. I think maybe if my foster parents my adoptive parents or the state or somebody, I guess, would have kind of connected them to more resources when it came to like taking care of like a Black child, I think would have been really beneficial for me. I was going to like Great Clips to get my hair cut up until I think like 12 years old. And so things like that was kind of weird. But no, my parents, they tried really hard, actually. They found a braider here in St. George to do my sister's braids. And I think I did cornrows one time from her. And so my adoptive parents, they honestly tried their best. But I think as a community, as a whole, actually, I think building on those resources, making sure that those resources are known within the adoption community, because they're there, you know?
Yeah.
And if they're not there, I think what we should be doing is creating those opportunities, you know? Something that I hope to do down the road is, you know, inform people of like the resources that are there when it comes to like adoption and transracial adoptions as well. But yeah, I think in general, I think one word that I would just kind of capture all of that is spreading awareness and spreading knowledge. I think knowledge is key when it comes to adoption. And I think if my parents or the state could have like actively involved themselves in getting to know more about trauma, getting to know more about the development of kids in foster care, or even just the development of them in the womb, even I think would have been a huge impact on my life.
Yeah.
So I think inform, knowledge, and just that consistent drive of like wanting to learn more, I think.
Yeah. You had mentioned earlier that two of your sisters have similar like racial makeup. We've also heard from other adoptees, like the importance of having racial mirrors in your life. When you were children, did the three of you have anyone else outside of your family that were in your circle or in your community that you felt connected to racially?
A little bit, yeah. So like I said, we had like two hairstylists that were both Black as well. And then we had a lady in our ward that was African-American, and we really liked her actually, and we were able to connect with her. So I wouldn't say as much when we were younger, but I would say early teenagers, those racial mirrors were kind of more there. I think with me playing sports and stuff, I had a Black coach, and then had a Black barber, and then obviously more Black kids in the area. And so having different like teammates and, school classmates also, I saw a few people that looked like me as well. And so I think just naturally, I think those racial mirrors like appeared, but I think actively they weren't there as much.
Yeah. It could have been more intentional.
I think it could have been
side maybe. Okay.
Absolutely. More intentional for sure. But I think just naturally too, living in Southern Utah, there's not many people of color. So I think that kind of affected it. But it's interesting now because I see, I don't know, kind of a little soft spot in my heart is like, I see there's times when I go to like the grocery store with my mom or whatever, and I see this like white mom like pushing around this like brown child, and the dad might be Black, right? But I always think like, oh my gosh, like that was me as a child, and so there's a lot more people here in St. George, and it's like I said, it's just great to see those racial mirrors and see that there's more diversity, within the community that I grew up in. So yeah, it's really cool.
Thanks for sharing that. How do you navigate this kind of almost dual identity or sense of belonging to both your adoptive family and your birth family and that culture?
Yeah, it's really difficult. I've talked to my one sister just above age with me several times about this, but it's difficult. I first really kind of like started involving myself with my biological family in general when my dad passed away. There's a few of my family members on my mom's side actually that were at his funeral. And so I connect to both sides actually around the same time. But yeah, it's difficult. It's a constant battle with myself, right? Because I'm just a caring person and I want to love and care for everybody. At the same time, I know that like, I can't force that on other people, right? And so I think when it comes to some of my biological siblings on my mom's side, it's hard to mend those relationships just because I don't think it's as reciprocated enough. So that's kind of hard. But then on my dad's side, I think honestly, what I was trying to say, I think effort is like an important key when it comes to all of this. And so I think I definitely put a decent amount of effort into wanting a relationship with them, and I think they do as well. But I think it's definitely difficult, right? I don't know. There's a lot of words I could say, but I'm also that type of person where like I don't want to speak for other people, right? And so I don't want to like share certain things. But
right.
I would say just generally, like, yeah, I think communication and effort speaks volumes when it comes to relationships in general, right? But I think that would be the key takeaway point for me when it comes to, balancing the dual identity of foster care adoption on both sides. Would really just be effort into a relationship for sure.
Maybe building on this a little bit. So you mentioned in the beginning it was closed, or in that you didn't have any type of communication or knowledge of who your biological birth family was. Then it opened up. A lot of people listening to this podcast may consider like, why is open adoption important for the adoptee? What are the benefits? And obviously there's challenges that come with it, but maybe could you highlight some of the benefits and maybe some of the challenges that you've faced now that your adoption is open?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say challenges, like I said, obviously my parents couldn't really hide it, not that they would, but so I remember like looking at pictures as a kid and like seeing pictures of my biological dad, but I don't think it really like, I don't think I was really consciously aware that I was looking at him until I think around that age, like 8, like I said. So knowing that like I was adopted and knowing that like I had this other family was very interesting to me. At the same time, like my family was obviously very loving and caring. And so I didn't feel the need to really explore that until later on in my life. And so, but as I look at it now, right, as I look back on that, I'm like, oh, okay. Looking at like my whole like depression and anxiety, right? Maybe if I would have had that relationship with my biological father or a sibling or a cousin on my, black side, I might have been able to relate to some of these anxiety triggers that I was having due to my racial identity that they could have helped me with. And so I think when it comes to, kind of those negative aspects of that close adoption, I think really are just kind of surrounded around my racial identity, unfortunately. I think just knowing where I came from now and knowing that, like, I think just knowing the story in general, because I think that was another big part of it too, is like, okay, why didn't my dad just like raise me, or why didn't my mom raise me? I think now that I have those, questions answered, I think it's really, it's another part of like my healing journey that is really beneficial for me. But yeah, I think those relationships are, continuing to grow. But I think knowing like where I came from and knowing all of that is really helpful.
So, how have you dealt with questions or curiosity from others regarding your adoption?
Yeah, I would say up until about like this year, I've dealt with it pretty good. It's always like kind of funny because it's one of those things where like in high school and like middle school, I was always asked a question, or people always ask the question of like, oh, like what's something unique about you? And I'd always say like foster care, or like I was adopted or something like that. And everyone was like, oh my gosh, like no way, that's crazy. And so I think getting questions like that are very interesting to me. But yeah.
What do you feel like some of like the misconceptions or stereotypes about adoption are, and what would you want people to understand?
Yes, probably one that like our parents didn't love us, or that they didn't care about us, or something like that. I would say, or that like kids in foster care like unwanted. I think that's just a crazy stereotype. I don't even know where who came up with that one. I think just things like that are definitely huge misconceptions.
How do you feel like the just number of experiences you've had in your life now shapes or affects your relationships with others?
Oh yeah. I would say it's pretty difficult actually. I think that's one of the things that, well, one of my main things actually that I'm probably going to work on in therapy for the rest of my life is, balancing those relationships. I think there's so many caveats to my experiences, being adopted, being in foster care, being in all of these programs that like have shaped me into the person I am today. And so I think there's a lot of healing when it comes to like, trusting other people. I think another part of that is actually oversharing. I think that's something that even just this month, because it is Foster Care Awareness Month, I haven't really felt this way before, but it hasn't been up until this month where I've kind of stepped back a little bit and been like, you know what, like I can be that foster care advocate. I can share my story and I can help people because of that. At the same time, like, that doesn't need to be who I am. That doesn't need to be my full personality. And so I think really just balancing, yeah, it's really unique, right? It really is. I think there's a huge push nowadays, obviously, to speak out against things. And I think there's obviously some really amazing benefits of that. At the same time, it's like, I think there's some things that you can kind of just keep to yourself. And so I think up until this moment, like I have shared a lot of details about my life in a lot of public areas, and I will continue to do that, obviously. But I think instead of, going into my past, I think I'm gonna go into the current and the future and my goals that I have now versus the things that I had to go through, because like I said, all of these things have shaped me into the person I am, and I want to change that. And so it's not like I'm forgetting those things, but it's almost like I can heal from those things because it's hard, especially like as an advocate and all these things they speak about, like it's constantly reliving that trauma in a lot of ways. And, you know, studying psychology and meeting with my therapist, I realized that like bringing those things up all the time is not healthy for you, unfortunately. And so I think that's kind of like the current temperature of my life right now is kind of that idea of like not feeling the pressure to, you know, share every single detail about my life every day.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be challenging. And I think, you know, if we put all of our identity or focus all of our identity into one aspect of our life and everything revolves around that, when we have ups in that area or downs in that area, it really affects us a lot. Right. And so I get the feeling of kind of spreading it out, and not saying that this is me and this is all of me, but this is a part of who I am and this is a part of what I've experienced, but that doesn't define everything. Yeah, that's challenging. How have your adoptive parents helped you navigate your relationship with your biological parents, your birth parents?
Yeah, definitely. I would say, you know, like I said, meeting my biological family at 15 was really difficult, but since then, they've always really been supportive of, you know, having that relationship with them. I think it's difficult because there's a part of me that's like, I don't want to hurt my adoptive parents. I don't want to hurt them and, you know, be like, oh, I didn't care about them or I didn't, you know, love them as much. And so I think there's a part of me that's really, really, what's the word I'm looking for? Resistant to connecting with my biological family. At the same time, like they've always been fully supportive of that. And so I think just things from like, you know, there's times where like I would even just like get dropped off at them, or I was like, hey, I want to go visit my, you know, biological cousin. Can you take me to this get together? And I was able to kind of go with them. And so there has always been kind of like that active commitment to allowing me to have a relationship with them. But I think now as a 22-year-old, as an adult, you know, I'm having to navigate that myself, you know? But no, my parents always did a great job of being able to allow me to explore that because that's something that they know I really wanted, so.
Yeah, I love how you shared that. My thought was actually, my next question was going to be navigating that relationship now as an adult. Any advice for, the adoptee who's a teenager coming up on adulthood, or the adoptive parents who have a teenager that's coming up on adulthood, and how they can kind of transition that to the adoptee rather than the adoptive parents?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say just keep an open mind. You know, I think for a lot of adoptees, right, we have kind of that, you know, fairy tale ending or that expectation that our biological family are going to be like these perfect, amazing people, right? And so I think just keeping like an open mind when it comes to that. I know for me, you know, just not knowing much about them in general, I don't think I had really high expectations as much. I think the expectations I did have was like, I hope that they want a relationship with me and I hope that like they're in like a good place. And so I think finding that within yourself and knowing that, like, to keep an open mind. And I think just adoption is really difficult. And so you never kind of know what to expect. And so giving yourself grace, I think that's a word that I'll say time and time again, is allowing to find that within your heart that, like, it's okay, whatever happens, or it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. To the teenage adoptee listening to this, I mean, in addition to giving yourself grace, like, what other advice or tips would you share?
I would say that it is going to be okay. I think that was such something that I was really struggling with, you know, as a teenager, like in care, although I did, you know, have that relationship with my adoptive family, like, I did feel lost and I did feel scared and I felt like nobody wanted me and that I was just in this weird place of like wanting to just age out and wanting to be on my own and do my own thing. And so I think what I would tell to, you know, all the adoptees out there, all the youth in foster care that are getting ready to age out, that like it's going to be okay, as long as you are able to just, like I said, find it within yourself and give yourself grace and know that like this hand that you were dealt like is not a forever thing, and that you are going to be able to overcome those things. You are going to be able to grow as a person despite those experiences in care. And so I think just continuing to grow every day, do something little every single day, just getting up, going outside, reading a book. I think just the little things really honestly add up. I know for me, obviously, with my passion of music, I think if I wouldn't have had music in my life, I wouldn't be, in the place I am now. But I think just finding those things that you really enjoy to do and finding your passions and goals in life, I think is really going to be helpful for you when it comes to moving forward in your life.
Awesome. And for our listeners, I did hear Caden sing live, and he does have an amazing voice. So I'm glad that that passion has helped you probably even heal, but have a place to turn when maybe some of the emotions are challenging to deal with. And yeah, I love that you shared that. Thank you so much. Well, as we begin to wrap up, any kind of parting thoughts or any message that you would want to leave our listeners with?
I would just say, I think the foster care and adoption community as a whole, I think what we really all need is to just come together as a community and support each other. And so I would say for everybody listening, there's so many resources out there. There's so many things you could be doing, from reposting something on social media to volunteering for a nonprofit to, opening up your arms to adopting a kid in foster care. I think it's just going to be so beneficial to this community. I think it's one of those things where it's like, if you look statistically, right, like even within this month of Foster Care Awareness Month, like I don't know exactly, the number changes every single day, but like there's been so many kids who have been placed into the foster care system. And so I think being aware of that and being aware that there's so many kids impacted by, adoption and all of that, I think is just going to be something that keeps us going, something that keeps us on our feet of constantly trying to do something to change this world for better. But yeah, I think honestly, just continue to do things that you enjoy and continue to do things that you love and are passionate about is really, I think, what's going to help this community as a whole.
Awesome. Well, like I mentioned, you do a lot on social media. For our listeners, where can they connect with you or see some of the things that you're advocating for on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. So my Instagram is like the main account that I use. And so it's my first name and then my middle name. So Caden, Cadon, and then Riley, Riley. But I post a lot on there. Like I mentioned, I am a singer-songwriter, and so I am actually going to be coming out with another song this summer. So hopefully in the next month or so. So be on a lookout for that.
Awesome.
Yep.
Very cool. Well, Caden, thank you so much for being with us. We love you. Like Lena and I have just felt like just really connected to you after we met a month ago, and are inspired by you and are just so grateful for all the work you're doing in this community.
Well, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. And likewise, I think meeting you and Lynette was just an amazing experience, and being able to kind of hear the things that you guys are doing when it comes to like open adoption, I think is very inspiring and very needed in this world. And so once again, thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Thanks so much.
Well, Caden, thank you so very much for being with us on the show today. It really is such a privilege to know you. We're so thankful for your vulnerability in sharing these personal experiences and thoughts and teaching us and helping us to do better going forward. I really just love and respect Caden. He's a great person.
Yeah. I think from today's conversation, I'm kind of like trying to walk, like, what am I walking away with altogether? And I have this just like stronger encouragement or deeper desire to just love, and particularly love people who are in circumstances that are less than ideal, kind of challenging.
I feel like that's a big takeaway from a lot of our conversations, right? Like in adoption, I think love really needs to be at the center of all we're doing, right? Loving these first parents, loving these children, and yeah, love, respect, communication, compassion. These are just really important elements of creating harmony and strong relationships.
Yeah. And I love that we could hear from Kaden. Our goal and our hope as a podcast, as an organization, is to elevate the voice of adoptees. And while you heard in this conversation, like, we recorded this back in May, which was Foster Care Awareness Month, and he had been talking at a lot of different engagements, and he shared, you know, sometimes it's difficult oversharing, like that's the challenge and kind of a balance here, but we really appreciate the fact that he would share his experience so that we could learn from him.
Yeah, I feel like that challenge resonates with us. We have a hard time too. I know a lot of people struggle more with the other side of that, right? Like feeling comfortable sharing anything is hard. But Sean and I think fall in that same category that Kaden was talking about, where it's, yeah, we have a harder time trying to make sure we're not sharing too much information. And yeah, it's a hard tightrope.
Yeah, it's challenging.
But yeah, I mean, we're just so thankful for him teaching us, and helping the community. He does a lot of work to try to make things better for other individuals in foster care.
Yeah. And I actually just had a phone call with him earlier while I was editing, and he said he is going to be dropping a new song in the next week or two. So when he does, we'll be sure to include that in our social media as well.
He has a beautiful voice. It was really fun to hear him sing at the Foster Care Symposium.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Open Adoption Project. And once more, again, Kaden, thank you for your willingness to be with us.
Yep. Keep listening for more adoptee experiences, and help us as we strive to keep adoptees at the center of all that we do.